You're listening to Fight for Love, the podcast for women dealing with pornography addiction in their relationship. Here is your host, Rosie McKinney.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I am very excited about today's episode because we're trying something new here. I have with me a very dear friend of mine. Her name is Heather Creekmore, and she is an author, a speaker, a podcaster, and a body image coach. Because I've been wanting to tackle this topic of body image for a while, and I've really just been sitting and thinking about it, because as wives and partners of porn or sex addicts, this is a massive issue. This is like body issues on steroids. So I've really been waiting for the right person to just come and join me and just dialogue about this, because she's got some really wonderful faith based insight that I think will bless you. So welcome to the show, Heather.
Oh, thanks, Rosie. It's wonderful to be with you.
It's so lovely to sit down and actually talk to you. We connected through a Christian podcasting group, and as soon as I found out what Heather did, I'm like, right, I need to contact her.
I am excited for this conversation.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your ministry, because it must be so needed.
You know, it's one of those things that I never thought I would be talking about, this whole body image issue. It's something I struggled with from elementary school on. And so when God kind of showed me my path out of really obsessive struggles with body image, he also showed me that I should start writing and speaking. And I was like, oh, I'll do anything, God, but I don't want to talk about these issues. these are the private issues, the secret things that we never talk about with anyone, right? And so, but God has proven himself faithful to use my struggle and my story to minister to other women. And like you said, my women are women that are struggling with the way they look, and maybe have been struggling with that for, you know, years or even decades, and they're looking for some hope. And so that's what I am attempting to provide.
And you really do. I have been listening to Heather's podcast. I've been binge listening, and it's really, really fabulous, because I must admit, when I set off pushing the button, I was like, please don't tell me that I just have to love my body. Mm-hmm. You know, because that lasts for what, 7 seconds? You know,
I just
can't do it. I don't know how. It just doesn't. Does it work for you? Right. If it works for you, listener, write in and tell us, because it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would be so frustrated, because there was that seemed to be the secular answer for a while. That was culture's answer, was just love your body and just, you know, love whatever you got. Love your stretch marks, love your cellulite, you know, just be proud of your ugly, because it's your ugly. And I was like, oh, I can't be comfortable with that. And then in the church, I also felt like there was a similar message, maybe with a little scripture around it, but it was the same kind of like you should just be happy with the body you have, because God made it and you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And it was body love with just a little bit of Bible to it. And neither one helped me really find freedom. And so really, I don't know if you want me to go into this now, Rosie, but from...
Well, actually, I might leave this. Sorry, listener, to tease you. But Heather has some answers, because we've said what doesn't work, but Heather has actually got some answers that do work. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about the problem itself. And before we came on the air, we were just chatting, and I was asking Heather, I was saying, so are there people in your support group that you work with who are married to porn addicts? And, you know, have you had a lot of feedback there? And just tell us about that post that you mentioned.
Yes. So I wrote a post called His Lust Problem Is Not About You. And I probably wrote it 7 or 8 years ago. And honestly, it's my story of, I hate to use the word naively, but I think that's the right word. I naively believed that I was marrying a man who had never looked at porn. Now, you should know that I married a man who didn't come to faith until he was 27 years old and was in the Marine Corps.
So say no more.
I'm like, I was ridiculous. Super hopeful.
I like the optimism.
Right. And so it was shortly after we got home from our honeymoon, actually. I mean, we're talking days. And I was trying to get onto his computer, and he had Kevin and Eyes on there. And I was like, Kevin and Eyes? What is that? Why do you have this on your computer? And it was at that point that he confessed to me that this had been a struggle for him for quite a while, and that, you know, he was praying and trusting God to help him with it, but, you know, he needed accountability. And instead of responding with a, well, praise God, you have accountability and you're getting a handle on it, I was destroyed. I was crushed. And because of my body image issues, and because I entered marriage really believing that marriage would fix my body image, that may sound strange at first. I don't think I was conscious of it, but I think through my 20s, my husband and I didn't meet till we were 30. So through my 20s, I think I believed that if I just had a man who thought I was good enough to marry, then I wouldn't struggle with my body anymore. Like, I just kind of needed a stamp of approval, and that would come with a ring and a wedding ceremony. And instead, I think just the opposite happened. I got married and I felt all of a sudden this like I was in a competition with every other woman, and that my husband was going to see every other woman and compare me to every other woman. And then to find out that he had any kind of background in this at all, and that this was still a temptation, that crushed me. I was like, oh my, I can't do this. I mean, I really, really thought I had married the wrong man, that our marriage didn't have any hope to survive this. I mean, I was really in a bad place. And most of it was related to the fact that I really believed that there was no way my husband could think I was beautiful if he had seen other women that met culture's definition of beauty and seen all of them, right? So it was a really difficult thing that we walked through. And more so even for me personally because of my body image issues. And so, yes, so to go back to what you asked initially, that's the long version of what my post was about. And so that post, Rosie, honestly, I've got like 500 posts on my website. I write about body image issues and comparison from every angle. But that post gets more traffic than anything else on my website because, as you know, women all over the globe are struggling with this in their marriages. And so, yes, I have a lot of experience talking to women who are really wrestling. How do I feel good or okay with my body when he's looking at or has seen all that's out there?
Yeah. Thank you, Heather. That really validates for everybody listening that this is a ubiquitous problem. Mm. And for you, who are very well aware of your own body comparison issues going into it, we say there was like a spectrum of body people who suffered with body image, I think you'd acknowledge that you were quite far up there. Mm-hmm. You know, it had moved into eating disorder. Well, how would you describe the eating? Would it eating behavior or?
Yeah, so I would classify myself as, it's called EDNOS, technically the eating disorder not otherwise specified. So I was never anorexic, bulimic, or even orthorexic, maybe a little exercise bulimic, which is, you know, exercising enough to burn off calories. But even then, you know, there was a limit. So I didn't really fit a neat category of disordered eating, and yet I was certainly a disordered eater. I mean, there was nothing rational or normal about my approach to food and, you know, and control issues surrounding that as well.
Okay. So on the spectrum, you were certainly up there, and it was, right. It was a preoccupation.
Absolutely.
And so when you realized that pornography had been part of your husband's history or even his present, This was like rocket fuel. This was just triggering you all over the place. But what I want to say here is, even if you come into a relationship with a guy who's addicted to porn and your body issues aren't that great, It's still going to absolutely devastate you. And there's a very good reason for that, because we think that they're comparing us and being dissatisfied with us. And the truth is, they are. That's the hard part of this session. And so that spidey sense that's telling us that they are comparing us, you know, they're not quite present when they're with us, it's true. And they've done studies where they showed a mild amount of porn to a user group, and there was a control group as well. The user group was shown mild pornography for 6 weeks for an hour every week, and then the control group was shown, I don't know, nature documentaries or something. And then they rated everybody. They asked them, how do you now rate your partner in terms of their sexual performance and their attractiveness and your general satisfaction with the relationship? And the group that had been watching porn, every single time they rated their partner lower after being exposed to pornography. It's really hard. This is having an impact, and it is changing how they see us, but it doesn't mean that it's our fault. And the way that I've been thinking about this, and I don't know whether you're familiar with this story, Heather, of the Snow Queen. Do you know the Snow Queen? Mm-hmm. Hans Christian Andersen.
Is that what Frozen was loosely based on?
I don't know. So, well, let me just tell you what I was thinking. Okay. Because this is this dark fairy tale. And the premise is that the devil, in the form of an evil troll, makes a magic mirror that distorts the appearance of everything that it reflects. And his goal is to make fools of gods and the angels. But as he attempts to carry the mirror into heaven, it slips from his grasp and falls back to earth, shattering into billions of pieces. These splinters, some no larger than a grain of sand, are blown by the wind all over the earth, and they get into people's hearts and eyes, freezing their hearts like blocks of ice and making their eyes like the troll mirror itself, seeing only the bad and ugly in people and things. And this is exactly what has happened to our husbands, to our boyfriends, to our fiancés. Porn, like an evil splinter, has lodged in their eyes and is cruelly distorting everything that he sees. Not only has his ability to feel pleasure been numbed, but his arousal template has been hijacked by this super normal stimulus of airbrushed, augmented, perpetually young women enacting scripted sexual fantasies that most likely require drugs and coercion and serious editing to produce. And it's worth pointing out that these gorgeous fantasy women, the ones that we wish we could look like, are never actually portrayed as adored or cherished. No, they're always packaged and promoted as homogenized, interchangeable female body parts to be overpowered, degraded, and sexually exploited. And it's so tempting for us to think if we could only somehow avert our husband's gaze back onto us, our problems would be over. But this is ignoring the huge shard of evil mirror in their eye. And I really want you to get that image. They literally have this huge shard of evil mirror in their eye. Because even if we could snap our fingers and suddenly look like the women that he's secretly watching, would you really want him to be seeing you through that mirror?
Right.
I mean, how would it feel to be objectified like he objectifies them? Because let's be honest, the true longing of our heart is to be seen and desired as his unique and beautiful, irreplaceable bride.
I love that you use the word objectification, because I think that that is the main thing that women who struggle with these issues struggle with, right? So you're talking about it in terms of the men, right? Men are looking at these issues and objectifying, you know, the women that they see, right? But I believe that to combat that, just subconsciously, no one's aware that they're doing this, but to combat that, we start objectifying ourselves.
Yep.
We start looking in the mirror and seeing ourselves one-dimensionally. We start looking around at other women we actually know and seeing them just for their physical bodies and seeing them as a collection of, oh, that's a good butt. Oh, those are nice arms. Oh, she's got good abs. Instead of seeing them as body, mind, soul, spirit, a whole person as God created them, we begin to objectify. And so I think that's a temptation that we have to fight against, because we are not going to win the objectification battle, right?
And it's hard, isn't it? Because let's face it, we're brought up, you know, as girls, as women, you're either invisible or you're sexually attractive. They are like two options. You can either be sexually attractive and, you know, flaunt it and have power, or you're invisible. Mm. And the wonderful thing about growing older is you fear this invisibility. You really fear it. Oh no, I'm going to be visible. And then when it happens, like I'm in mid 40s, it's awesome. I mean, I can still dress up and, you know, work it. However, you know, the supermarket, I'm pretty invisible, and it's awesome. It really is.
See, it's funny that you say it's awesome because I don't know that I would go so far as awesome. Like, maybe I'm still struggling a little bit because I do, you know, we were going to talk about, I think we were going to go to grief here eventually, but part of me grieves that the best I can do right now is attractive. Like, no one's going to call me hot anymore. Like, I can dress up and do all the things. And attractive is as good as it gets when you're 46, right? So, I love that you think it's awesome.
Well, I think what I like is the fact, I mean, you know, I can walk down the street and I can watch the guys driving, checking out the younger women on the pavement. Uh-huh. And just that male, it's just horrible.
The pressure's off.
Horrible. It is. I really hated that. You know, walking and you're just feeling that you're being followed with people's eyes and you're just being objectified. It's hot. And so anyway, I've got completely off topic. I'm really sorry. So we were talking about the fact that it's true. They really are not seeing us straight. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned grief. And I think instead of trying to compete with it and become what he's watching, or trying to diet or plastic surgery or any of those things, trying to compete, we know in our heads that we don't actually want to be objectified like he's objectifying those, but we do want to be cherished and we do want to be desired and we do want to be their beloved, and we have to acknowledge that there is grief there really is a grief. And somebody posted today about grief in our support group, which was really interesting. And I got into a conversation with a friend of mine and she was talking about ambiguous loss, which sounded fascinating. And basically there are two types. There's one when the person is mentally present, but they're physically gone. So kidnapping, missing. Okay, that's ambiguous loss. But the other one is when they're physically present, but they're mentally no longer there, like Alzheimer's or a porn addiction. So your husband is there, but he's not really there because he's got this great stonking shard of poisonous glass in his eye that he's seeing everything through and he's not seeing you.
Right. Right. And well, the other thing I think that has to be grieved, and I've actually had some coaching clients that I've walked through with this, is just grieving your ideal, right? You expect to get married and feel all those things, right? To have that unconditional love, to be cherished, to be accepted just as you are, right? We all go into marriage with that hopefulness. This is my person. He's going to love me and want me, right? No matter what. And then when that falls apart because of porn, right? There's a loss there. There's a grief of a dream, a grief of an expectation, a grief of this is not the way it should be. This is not the way God designed it, right? So I think that there's definitely something to pausing and working in that grief and not just trying to shove it aside and fix all the things, because this is just not going to work.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how much you understand that his brain's been addled and this is a process addiction and it's all about his, you know, the chemicals in his brain and it's nothing to do with you. It still hurts. It really, really hurts. And so I just want to encourage people once again to get into support groups, because you're going to be doing that grief work all together, and it really helps you to just see other people going through exactly the same grief as you. Now, here's some good news, because I was chatting with my husband this morning and I was going, can it be reversed? Can you take that splinter out? Like, give me some hope. And he said, absolutely. And I said, well, how do we do that? Does it just disappear? Does it just evaporate? And he said, no, it's because pornography addiction is an intimacy disorder. So as you're creating that intimacy, especially with your wife, you are not only learning to empathize with her, but you're also feeling like she knows you on a whole deeper level because she's heard it all now. And she's still there and she still respects and loves you and she's hanging in there. And he says that gives you this incredible new feeling of appreciation. And suddenly your sexual desire is then attached to your emotional connection. And that's what we wanted. That's what we always wanted. We always wanted to be seen and appreciated and valued. Yes. And that's another good reason to really fight for love and fight you know, for the man that he can be, it is possible to melt this shard of glass. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but it is possible. So that's on the man's side. Now let's turn it over to you, Heather, and you can tell us how we can go about approaching our body image issues, which now have been crazily amplified on a massive scale.
You know, Rosie, our body image issues are really about things going on in our hearts. Just like for our men, these issues with lust are about things going on in their hearts, right? And so to try to appease the junk he's going through and dealing with making changes in our bodies is just never going to be the right solution. I really believe that our freedom has to come through what a pastor named Tim Keller says is self-forgetfulness, right? The more hyper aware we are of every part of our body, every aspect of our body, you know, especially every part that, you know, we feel insecure about, you know, the more we stay stuck there, the more we stay stuck obsessing over what we look like and what we can do to fix what we look like. And really the way I talk about it, and for me, what kind of turned the trajectory of me struggling with these issues to finding freedom from these issues was recognizing that I had made body image an idol for myself. And let me explain that, because that might be an unfamiliar concept to some of your listeners, because I grew up in the church. And so I thought idols were little statues that they made in the Old Testament. And those people were not as smart as we are today. So, you know, that wasn't a problem. I didn't have any of those in my house. In fact, we didn't even have a garden gnome growing up, just in case that was an idol. So I was idol free. But God showed me that there were modern day idols that we create. There are these things in our lives that we put our hope and our trust in, that we look to save us. Now, I don't mean save in a God and Jesus get to heaven sort of way, but save in a, this will make me feel good. This will bring me joy. This will bring me rest. I will finally have peace when this is the way I want it. And there's lots of things that can become our idols. You know, our marriages can become our idols. Our boyfriends can become idols. And so when you have a husband or a boyfriend that you have turned this relationship into, like, he's going to save me because I have this guy, and then he ends up getting into porn or becoming a sex addict, I mean, that's a toppling of an idol that is painful, right? But it's similar with our body image idols. What happens often is we believe that if we could just fix the things, if we could, you know, lose the weight or get the right, you know, nose size or chest size or butt size now, right? If we could get that thing in order, then we would get everything we want. And so what I think happens a lot of times for women who are in these situations where their men are struggling with porn and sex addiction, this body image idol comes in and it kind of reiterates all that they're hearing from their man, or even if they're not hearing it from them, all that they feel like he's saying without saying anything, right? And so the idol just kind of comes in and starts whispering, you know what? He wouldn't struggle with porn anymore if you were just hotter. If you would just go ahead and lose that 40 pounds, well, then he wouldn't be tempted to look at another woman. You know, he wouldn't even be tempted to do this. And the thing about idols is they lie, right? And so I think it's really important to just recognize that if these are the messages that you're hearing, that, you know, changing the way you look would free your man from this struggle, it's important to know that that's not the truth, right? This is his issue. He's going to have to deal with this. He's going to have to overcome this. I think you should totally be his number one fan to help him get through this, right? Whatever that looks like for you, not probably being his accountability partner, but that's your area, Rosie. So I don't want to go there. You guide women well in this area, but definitely be praying for him. You can be in his corner without endorsing it, I know, but realizing that fixing your body is not going to fix his problem.
And what I particularly love about your podcast, because it's not specifically on this area of when you're dealing with, you know, know, a guy who's made pornography his idol. He's made, you know, the female form his idol.
Right.
What you talk about in your podcast is our own idol and taking him completely out of the equation. We came into this relationship being somewhere on the body comparison scale. We all did. Not to say that, you know, the way you're feeling so bad now is your fault, but being with someone who is addicted to porn amplifies that and makes it a massive, you know, hideous problem that will totally preoccupy you and cause you to do things that you might not normally do, like consider plastic surgery or, you know, all these other things. Living in the culture we live in today, it's impossible not to have been influenced. But what your podcast says is that you can take control over your idolatry of body image and you can find freedom for yourself. And so how do you do that, Heather? How do you how do you take back control over how you're feeling?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the only person I can change is the person right here, right? And so it's definitely a process of recognizing this is my sin problem, right? And I'll be honest with you, there were times when we struggled early on where I just had no compassion for what my husband was going through at all. I was just like, turn it off. Flip the switch and turn it off. This is enough. This is hurting us. This is hurting our marriage. I am done with this issue you have. Stop it, right? And in my own journey through my junk with body image idolatry, when I flip the narrative and I think about him telling me, flip the switch, stop worrying about what you look like, stop obsessing over your food and just be normal with food, just stop worrying so much about your weight. And like, that's impossible. I can't just flip the switch. Like, what? That would just be cruel for him to ask me to do that, right? Because there was a lot more heart work that needed to take place in order for me to be able to do that. And so honestly, my own struggle has helped me have more compassion for my husband's struggle. Again, not that I would endorse it ever, right? Yeah. But likewise, he wouldn't endorse what I'm going through. And the honest truth is, my friends, a lot of us, even if our marriages don't have this extra issue, right? We bring some of this issue into our intimacy, right? We feel insecure about our bodies and it does impact our marriages. It impacts our availability, right? And so recognizing, okay, what is my part to deal with? And so I think, you know, when I talk to women that are in this situation as your audience, like the first thing I encourage them to do is not blame. Right? Because a lot of them will tell me, and this is how the message normally starts. I've struggled since high school, or I've struggled since junior high. But now that he's doing this, my struggle is, so much worse. And now I'll never be free. And what I like to encourage them to do is like, no, you told me you had the struggle before you met him. this is not his fault, right? He's like you said, throwing rocket fuel on it for sure. But we can't just blame him and live there because then we miss out on freedom for ourselves, right? Blaming is never, never the way to freedom, right? So we have to take responsibility and say, hey, you know what? This is an idolatry problem. I have this distorted view that I will somehow be saved, more free, have more rest, have more peace, have more joy if I look like this. And that's just not true. It's Jesus alone that can bring me contentment, satisfaction. You know, in his grace, I can find fullness of joy, right? And so recognizing that idol, there's a cure for idolatry, right? We just confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness, which I think is great news. Like, I don't know, it's crazy, but, you know, when I first start, most women that I hear talk about these issues, talk about these issues from their perspective of you just need to love your body more, right? It's about you. You can do something. You just need to muster up the willpower to either get the body you love or love the body you have, right? But I think when we can see that there may be a root of sin here, like there's a cure for that. There's no solution for just like, you just need more willpower to love your body more. Like, that's just hopeless for those of us who struggle, right? You can beat me over the head telling me to love my body and it's not going to work, right? But I think the good news is if we can see, oh, wait a second here, I'm chasing something that's not true. You know, help me, Jesus, forgive me for that and set me on a new course. That's where true freedom can be found.
I love that, Heather, because that is the answer. That is where our hope and our freedom can be found. And I just want to make two points. First one is, if you imagine like your front yard and you might have had a bit of trash, you know, a bit of body image, you might have no trash. You know, you might have no trash. If you're with a porn addict, he's just put a load of trash in your yard. If you're with an abusive man who then explicitly tells you that you're not attractive enough, he's just put a dump load full of trash. You've now got a yard full of trash. You have now got issues. Doesn't really matter where they came from in terms of they're now your problem that you now have to deal with. And Heather is saying there is a solution. There is hope. It's just devastating that your front yard is now filled with that trash. You know, you did nothing. It was just your front yard and you just let him in and he put trash all over it. But there is a way out of it. And by cleaning it up, you might actually clean up everything. And there might have been stuff before that. I don't want to further blame women and say, oh, well, you came to this with, you know, issues. You might have done, you might not have done. It really doesn't matter. You've now got issues. We all have. All of us who've been through this journey. It's just inevitable. And I also want to say there's a reason that trash is there, and it's fear. And I wonder if you can just talk a little to the fact, why do we hang on to this big pile of trash? You know, why don't we just go, don't be ridiculous. You know, what you're saying doesn't matter. Or just look at those images. They're all airbrushed. It really doesn't matter. What is it about our need to hang on to, you know, our security in what we look like? Just talk a little bit about that fear for me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think most of us have consciously or subconsciously learned from the culture around us that how you look is what determines your value, right? And so even if you grew up in church like I did and knew the God and Jesus answer of, you know, 1 Samuel, God looks at the heart, I think culture tells us such a different message and we are so bombarded by that message, you know, I don't even know the number of how many times per day, right? That it's really a scary proposition to think about living in such a way where you would be free from worrying about your appearance, right? But let me make something clear, right? Worrying, you know, worry implies fear, right? and really what's underneath that, right, is worrying, will I be accepted? Will I be loved? Will I be taken care of? Will I be rejected? Like, what is going to happen to me if I am not fearful about my appearance, right? If I'm not worried about what I look like. But, you know, the interesting thing, and I like to apply like the way we look, physical appearance struggles to money struggles a lot, right? Because in Matthew 6, Jesus talks about the treasure principle and, you know, where your treasure is, your heart will be also, right? And a lot of us don't have a problem trusting God for financial things, right? Like, okay, you know, it's hard for some, but what I've found is women that, I don't know, I guess God is gracious in that that we all have our one area that we struggle in more than another area. And so a lot of the women I work with, financial things, it's like, I can trust God to provide. Yeah, okay, we might not have enough money to pay our bills this month, but I can trust God to provide that. But, ooh, trust God that I would still be accepted if I gained 15 pounds? No, can't do that. Can't take that chance. Can't risk it, right? And so there are other areas of our lives where I think we have to surrender control and really call out the fear and say, okay, no, God, you can have this too. But I feel like our body is a tough one. It's kind of a holdout, right? Yeah. Like, you can have everything else, but I'll take care of this.
It's interesting. I was writing notes as you're speaking, and I wrote surrender and control because I think when you're in this fight, when you're in this battle, you desperately need to have at least some semblance of control. And it's really hard to just let it go because even though you know in your head, it doesn't really matter if I drop a couple of dress sizes, it's not going to fix his problem. It's not going to make him want me the way that I want to be wanted. Right. It's not going to prevent him from going off with somebody younger. It's like the fear is so much greater, that the amount of trash in your yard is so much greater, and the amount of fear is so much greater, because you've got deception going on and you've got betrayal going on. It's really, really hard. So this whole process is a crucible for your faith and this glorious, horrible opportunity to surrender. Surrender your marriage, surrender the idol of your body image, surrender, just surrender the whole lot. And it's really scary. But when you do that, and in recovery, you do that because you start working on yourself. You trust that he is now in a place of recovery and he is working his path. And eventually you can come back together. If you're both working, you know, and pulling in the same direction. But it's really, really scary. And I just feel like this is another area. I mean, we talk about how this is a gift. And this is just another area in which it is a potential gift. Through this, you might get rid of your body image issues. I mean, I think I have. I mean, it might be the process getting old, but I think it's more than that. I think it's because I feel truly seen, truly heard, truly, truly cherished in a way that I didn't do before.
I think a lot of us that have had body image issues come into marriage, and this is going to sound strange, but follow me here. We come into marriage kind of hoping for objectification. Not that that's really what we hope for, but we're satisfied with it, right? I'm satisfied with you just thinking I'm hot and you just wanting to look at me, right? And you just thinking that I'm the hottest person you've ever seen, and you just being like enamored by what I look like, and you know, you seeing me on the outside. And again, intellectually, we would say, oh no, I want him to love me for all of me, right? But I think dating in our modern era, dating conditions us to want to be objectified. I want you to press like on my picture and then ask me out because of what you saw, right? And so I think we enter marriage with that. And then, you know, I don't know, a couple weeks, couple months in, we're like, oh, I need more than this. Are entering marriage being satisfied with he thinks I'm pretty, he thinks I'm attractive, he thinks I'm hot, makes it more complex as we enter the rough terrain. When that's when it turns into the imaginary beauty contest, right? Uh-oh, now it's me versus her, me versus all the women on the internet. And that's when it gets messy.
That's so interesting. I really love how you phrase it. I hadn't thought of it like that, but it makes total sense.
I found in the women I'm coaching, and this is actually what my next book is on, is there's this trifecta is what I call it. And I call it the trifecta of the image idol. So there's appearance issues, which is what we're talking about, right? How do I look? What's my weight? All those things, right? But then accompanying appearance is control. Right? Control is always there. It's always under the surface. Eating disorders are really, you know, problems with control, right? They're an expression of I need to control more in my life. So I'm going to, you know, to take this route of behavior, right? And then there's one more, it's approval. And that's where it gets really tricky when you're in a marriage or in a relationship with someone who is doing all the things, right? Because approval is shattered, right? Control is shattered because I can, you know, I think going back to dating, right? If you are quote unquote hot or feel like you have his attention for what you look like physically, then we know as women, we have some control there, right? We
feel
powerful in that, right? But so control is now shattered. Approval is shattered. And appearance is the only stool left that image idol has to stand on. And so it works really hard to keep the stool up. And so I feel like all three of those things working together is really important for women to recognize. This just isn't about how you look. This is about other things too.
That's really good. And I think it really just highlights why it is so painful. It is so painful, and why this isn't like being married to an alcoholic. You know, this it's different. This goes right to the heart of us, because you know, for a lot of us, it is like the only bit left when everything else is gone.
Right.
So I think we need to end with some hope, Heather, don't you?
Yes, hope. Well, I, you know, yeah, hope.
So what steps, what, so if somebody's listening to this and they're like, okay, I want to be free. You know, I understand that I have now got all this trash, you know, for whatever reasons, my yard is full. What are the first steps?
Right. Well, you know, and do you talk about boundaries in your recovery group?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so just thinking about boundaries in your yard illustration, like with all kinds of grace and compassion, it's like recognizing the boundaries, like it's your yard. You've got to still take care of your yard. And it's not fair. It's not right what has happened to your front yard. And, you know, and I pray for lots of support, and it sounds like you're giving that support, Rosie, but remembering the boundaries, taking care of the front yard, right? And then the hope is that you can be free and you can get to a place where you're not going to accept the trash in your front yard as easily anymore, right? Where you're going to be able to be standing out there saying, mm-mm, you're not dumping that here, right? I have found new freedom and new hope in the truth that, you know, Jesus is big enough to take care of this. If he was big enough to take care of my biggest problem, which is my need for someone to die for all of my sin, right? And offer me eternal life. He can take care of this thing too. He can take care of my struggle with wanting to be a different weight or wanting to look different, wanting, you know, different features, right? He is big enough to take care of it. And I love how you said it just a couple of minutes ago, though. It is an interesting dynamic to watch. And I've seen it, just my husband's a pastor, and I've seen it walking with couples through this, how when we as women can start to work on our junk, and if you're married to someone who is willing to work on his junk, whoa, how much stronger you are when you come back together, and how God can do amazing things to heal parts of you that you didn't even know were hurt. Right. And maybe your appearance is part of that, right? Maybe your body image is part of that, but there is great hope. I mean, I've seen it in our relationship. My husband has been free of all of that for, I would say, 14 or 15 years now. And we've walked with other couples, like I said, and there's great hope. It is not a lost cause. I think God can use this.
And you mentioned that the first step might be confession. So it might simply be maybe owning up to yourself that maybe body image has become a bit of an idol for yourself. Even if it's propped up by fear and terror and everything else, it is an idol that needs to come down. And that confession, especially with other women who understand, Satan hides in the lies. This is where he lives. He lives in the darkness. Let's just get it all out into the light, expose it to the light where he is. You know, where Jesus is, he is the light.
Right. Yeah. Seeing. And so after confession, where I normally direct women is to just start listening to the lies. Because like I said, a lot of times these lies have been around maybe since elementary school. Like these lies have become old friends. They are so familiar that many of the women I work with have convinced themselves that these are just their thoughts, that this is just, you know, this is just part of their thought life, and they don't even hear that these lies are just, you know, from from the enemy, but not even close to the truth. They can't even see how much they're being lied to because they've been hearing it for so long. So yes, confession first. And I encourage women, I say, hey, you know, I'm not pointing my finger. I'm not wagging a finger at you and saying, hey, you better confess this idol. No, not at all. What I think you need to do is just take 5 minutes with the Father and say, God, is this my problem? Right? Because it might not be. It may not be where you're stuck, right? But ask him, and he will be faithful to say in a very gentlemanly way, with conviction, not condemnation. There's a huge difference. Uh-huh. Yeah. My friend, you've kind of crossed the line. Like, be great if you could just get rid of that idol. And that, you know, I think that's a great place to start.
Because the end goal of this is for us, when our husbands are, they're in recovery and they're learning, empathy and appreciation and desire for us, right. We have to be able to receive it right. And believe it. So right. When I'm thinking of Solomon, I always assumed that his wife was young and beautiful. But really, when he says, you are altogether beautiful, my darling, there is no flaw in you. And I always assumed that she was flawless. But is it possible? Is it possible that his beloved bride is full of wrinkles, blemishes and stretch marks and extra curves? I hope so. I hope she is. Of course she is. Because that's all of us, isn't it?
Right.
So his ability to really just adore her and her ability to receive his adoration, both free, because their actual value is in the one who actually paid for them.
Amen.
So tell us where we can reach you, Heather.
Yes, I am at comparedtowho.me. So it's comparedtowho.me as my website. I'm Compared to Who on social media. My podcast is called Compared to Who, and my books are Compared to Who and The Burden of Better. And they're both available on Amazon and everywhere Christian books are sold.
So thank you so much, Heather. This has been really, really interesting and really, really helpful.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Rosie.
Thanks for joining us. If you would like to ask the Fight for Love team a question or see our recommended resources, check out our website at fightforloveministries.org.